It's your turn to be afraid.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.
Welcome back to Nerds from the Crypt, the podcast where we review your favorite and sometimes not so favorite horror movies, series, and comics. We also interview indie creators about their upcoming and ongoing horror projects. But before we start our episode, I want to go ahead and remind you all that we are part of the Spoilerverse Network, where you can find other great nerd-related projects. Greg will be joining me today as we talk with our guest, Frankie White, about two great comics we had the pleasure of reading. First, we're going to be talking about Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood, followed by the murder mystery comic, Who Killed Sarah Shaw? Well, let's go ahead and jump right into it with our interview with Frankie White. Hello, Frankie. Thank you for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm based in Chicago, and this is like the first day where it feels like it's finally spring. So very happy. Like, I'm actually excited to go outside and do yard work, which is a rare occasion. It's like the one day of the year where I'm like, yes, finally, and then never again.
You see, I'm in Texas, and I thought that was earlier this week, and yesterday I woke up and it was cold and rainy again, and I'm like, well, those two things, they don't happen in Texas.
That's the thing. I'm that's why I'm excited about it. I looked at the forecast. It's like pure sun for the next 7 days. And I'm like, we in Chicago, at least, it is very much like it could be 70 one day and then like 30 degrees the next day. This time of year sucks.
I think I got your weather, Frankie. I mean, Seattle, we had hail. We're back in the high 30s, low 40s right now. It's cold. It's ridiculous.
And Frankie, just for the listeners who are not familiar with the work, can you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So my name's Frankie White. I write comics. I have been writing comics now for, I want to say, eight years, it feels like, I think. I don't know the exact number, but it's been a while. I love to bounce around and do all kinds of different stuff, but obviously horror is one of my favorite genres, especially like as a viewer, as a consumer of mm-hmm. media. So horror is where I take a ton of my influences from, even when I am not writing horror stuff. So like I'm doing fantasy, well, there's fantasy with a tinge of horror in it. Okay. You know, true crime, it's true crime with a tinge of horror in it. You know, I always got to squeeze it in. But yeah, I've been doing this now for a long time. I love writing comics. I think it's one of my favorite ways to express myself as a creator. The fact that you get to have that sort of like collaborative feel where as you write a script and then you hand it off to the artist, I can like pass it off to them and be like, all right, you do you now, bring your flair to the story, which I really enjoy as a collaborator.
So what was the first thing you did in comics? Not necessarily professionally, just in general in comics, whether it be horror related or not.
The first project I ever had, it was based off of a drawing I did when I was in, I don't know, probably like third grade. And it was called Wolf Vacation. And it was a giant werewolf, and he was wearing a little bowler hat, and he had a suitcase. And so I was like, you know what? Like, and this was when I first started. I was like, I don't know what I want to do, but I liked that idea. And so I took it and I turned it into a webcomic where it is basically, it was kind of like a BoJack Horseman meets Criminal Minds flair. So it's this anthropomorphic animal city, but at the same time, it's also this sort of active investigation of a bunch of serious crimes in the town of Ice Cream City. So it was this like weird hodgepodge of ideas. It got very, very dark at times, but always like bounced with the fact that it, you know, it's a bunch of talking animals, so you can't take it too seriously up front.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you have to take every single project as it comes. You know, like it gives you its own parameters of what you're supposed to be, your I guess sense of disbelief or whatever. It's like in movies, right? Superhero movies, you kind of put yourself in that kind of realm, I guess. But then you get movies like The Fast and the Furious that are supposed to be grounded, supposedly. but then you get cars flying up in the air and doing these things that the physics don't lend itself to. So it kind of takes you out of what's actually going on.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. Every project has its own set of parameters that you kind of follow on what you think is essentially like where you can jump the shark, so to speak, and where you can't. definitely like that. And I tend to err on the side of like, I like being a little extra with some of my stuff. So like a lot of the projects are, you know, it's anthropomorphic animals in a crime infested city. And one of them is on vacation and their vacation is they cause mayhem wherever they go. And then they just fucking bounce when the weekend it's a dark fantasy story. And the squire kills her mentor in exchange for powers, but she's a fucking punk and she doesn't know how to use it. You know, so it's like, you know, different. That one's a little more grounded in the sense that I want you to take those characters seriously, but mm-hmm. the premise is always kind of like, I like to be a little out there and have some fun with it.
So Frankie, what was the first thing that you can remember horror wise that you can say was your inspiration or in the horror genre?
So the first thing I can remember, the two movies that are in that wheelhouse that sort of burned themselves onto my brain as a small kid. Like I saw them way too young. So my aunt took me and my cousin to go see Starship Troopers in theaters. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I was probably like six or like that scene of the slug, you know, sucking the guy's brain out, you know, that's burned into my head. And then the other one, obviously, because at that same time it was Scream. Now I didn't see that in theater. I watched that at home and that was very much like, I should not have watched that. Like at the age I did, terrified the garage door was going to crush me for like the next like 4 years of my
life. Oh man.
But yeah, ever since then, like that has been something that's just been an active part of my life.
Well, I guess the Scream aspect kind of I don't know how the one of your comic book, we'll get into specifically into your comic books, but I think it kind of you can kind of tend to see that kind of inspiration in that Who Killed Sarah Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
Crime. Mm-hmm. Okay, so like I said, we're gonna go ahead and talk about two different comic books that you're graciously able to send us over to review. So yeah, let's go ahead and just talk about the first one.
So Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood, give you the elevator pitch. It is a sort of like graphic novellas, but we'll call it. It's not long enough to be a graphic novel, but it's not necessarily just like a single issue comic. It follows this engaged couple who are, you know, deeply in love, and the boyfriend gets a letter from his estranged parents asking them to come in because the dad is dying, and the son is like, fuck that, I hate my parents, like I'm not going to see them. And because his fiance Lisa has never met his family, doesn't know that side of his life, she presses him and says like, hey, I've really, you know, you should you know, mend these fences and like, let's go see him, let's like, you know, let's go see what that's like. And they go there and they meet him for mass, and there's a halfway point, and with no spoilers, because I don't want to spoil anything for people, but there's a halfway point where it's a normal domestic sort of like a romance book. And then halfway through it takes a turn to like shunting levels, society. Like it's a lot of that's where we push that hard R rating for the book, I'll say.
Mm-hmm. It went from like just being your normal day, normal day in the life of these characters, and then all of a sudden just sharp right to the horror aspect. Just once again to the next one. What would you say your inspiration for this particular comic would be?
So I grew up Catholic, if you couldn't tell.
So, no, not at all.
That was huge influence on it. And obviously, like the base idea is a very simple, you know, in the Catholic Church, when you get your communion, it's called transubstantiation, where the wafer and the wine literally are supposed to become the flesh and blood of Jesus Christ. And so that idea has always appealed to me as a horror fan, right? Because I'm like, that's fucking gross. Why are we doing this? Like, but so like, I was like, let's just lean into that. Let's just like take the veil away, and we'll lean into this idea where like they go to a mass and they actually eat these people so that they can have eternal life. Like we say we do, like if you take part in the Eucharist, you're engaging in like this aspect of like eternal life with Jesus. So like, let's take that. We'll just put it right at the front. We're going to not have it's not going to be a metaphor. We're just going to have them actually be people. And so that's definitely like the root of that. But then on top of it, you know, just the idea of, and I was very lucky, our publisher 100% signed off pretty much on everything right out of the gate. They that was a book I never thought I'd get to make, because that second half goes so off the rails. I thought I would get like some kind of pushback and be like, nah, we can't do that. Like, no, you know, like we're going to get banned. Like if we show at places, but our publisher was like 100% on board. They loved the idea. And so from that point on, it was about taking in some of my favorite horror influences. And while I don't wear them on the sleeve of the story, so to speak, but like, I'm a big John Carpenter fan. The artist is a big John Carpenter fan. So like at the beginning, the way the comic is structured, for those who are listening that don't know, every page, that's a letter sized comic book. So it's bigger. It's like a magazine size instead of like your standard US comic. And every page is just three long sort of CinemaScope style panels. So we were really trying to replicate like you were watching a movie. So If you're reading physically, it's like these big, huge pages that you'll, you know, go three down, and then you'll go to the next page, three down. If you read it digitally, like in a PDF or anything like that, it will scroll. It's like a flip book, essentially. Like you're just going down straight and it's panel, 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 panel. And it's essentially like you're watching like a storyboard. And so when it opens, though, we fucking jack the John Carpenter font for the intro where it has our credits. Both big John Carpenter fans. We wrote a score to go with it, which is completely us aping John Carpenter's style and everything with the synths and everything for it. Huge, huge influence on us as creators. And so leaning into that idea of, and Carpenter sensibilities too are sort of in the same vein, where it's like, before you get to the mayhem, you have to have a realistic setup with realistic characters, right? You have to kind of at least care a little bit, right? You have to know who Laurie Strode is and care about her as a person before you can let Michael loose, you know, and start wrecking havoc. So similar premise in that, but we took it sort of one step further, where it's like, let's set up this first half where it just seems mostly normal. You get a little bit of foreboding, a little bit of, you know, sort of drama, but that drama is rooted in the fact that it's, you know, this couple meeting their estranged parents and in-laws for the first time, right? And if anybody's ever met their significant other's parents, that's always usually a very awkward experience, right? Where you kind of have to walk on eggshells because you don't know them yet and how they will react to things you'll say. And so adding that layer of tension in, and you're thinking, wow, this is already, you know, one layer of tension you have to work with. And then once, like I said, once we get to the halfway point and we get to the real reason why they were invited, you know, that's when we go off the rails and we get to the gory bloodshed and nudity and all that fun stuff.
I'm just taking notes, because like it's in order to get eternal life, you have to eat people. I'm looking at that and I'm like, okay, well, I mean, that's just unlocked a whole nother level for me. Yeah. I mean, that's, I'm there. So, I mean, I got that in my notes now. Thank you for that. That's given me some hope for my future.
I do not endorse that. I want that. I don't need that coming back to me in a lawsuit. But yeah.
Scratch that, everybody. Don't do it. Don't do it. It's bad.
So what has been the reception to the comic?
I'm going to be honest, I was shocked that it's been widely enjoyed and loved. I've written a bunch of other stuff before that. And, you know, sometimes based on how I do my storytelling, the reviews can be mixed, because typically I try to not do what your standard, like essentially 3-act story is structured like. So sometimes people read it and they're like, that kind of like didn't play how I thought it would. So they don't like it. Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood, surprisingly, I don't think I've seen one negative review for it yet. Which again is shocking considering the content inside and the day we live in. So it gives me hope for the future that, you know, we're not turning into fucking prudes.
You were expecting more of a backlash?
I did. I mean, considering, you know, and again, not too much of a spoiler, but for people listening, the last like 30 pages of the book, everybody's naked, parts are getting cut out and eaten. You know, it is a, you know, violent, upsetting, and we don't shy away from the nudity. We're not trying to do upcuts or anything where it's like, it's full on nudity. It's shot and drawn, you know, as if you were just standing in a room with, you know, 30 naked people. So I was expecting like a little bit of a backlash just from the content that's in the book. But I think part of it is when we marketed it, we marketed it to the people that we know are going to want to read that, right? We're not trying to put it in fucking public libraries, right?
maybe your audience is just used to seeing a room full of 30 naked people.
Right. Exactly. It's honestly problem.
You do put it on there that's in rated R.
Yes.
Go ahead.
We definitely wanted people to know that. And that was something like in the marketing leading up to it when we released it, letting people know like this is not a book for children at all. This is an adults only book. This is, you know, we're gonna put some barometers of taste here and then on top of it, I think the thing I was a little bit more concerned about besides the nudity is with all my projects, I love doing genre mashing. I love to, you know, for a book called Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood, you might think that there's not a huge romantic element to it, but the strong core of the book is John and Lisa's relationship. And so when you start to mix those things, that's when you can kind of lose people, right? Because if you're calling it Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood, and you're pumping up, you know, oh, the back half's, you know, this bloody mess. Well, your gore hounds get excited for that, but then they might not want to read, you know, the part where it's just like, oh, it's just a relationship and the normal, you know, anxieties and fears that come with a relationship like that and trying to commit your life to a person and everything like that. So I was expecting to see not necessarily backlash for that, but just sort of a, hey, I like this part, but I didn't like this part or anything like that. And it really, like I said, I've been very, very happily surprised that it's been almost entirely positive.
So what are the plans for that series or?
So right now it's just the book. It's just the one story. We don't have any plans at this time to do a follow-up or anything. We did leave it with a stinger with a classic the end question mark sort of thing, right? Because there is more stories to tell if we do decide to do that. But part of me, I've always been a big fan of like open-ended endings, right? Piss people off usually. I love that stuff. So part of me doesn't want to do anything more with it. I have talked to Adam, who's the artist on it and co-creator, and we kind of joked that if we do a follow-up, it has to be something like totally different. Like we have to once again like pivot hard and change what people would expect from a sequel to Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood. So the jokey idea we've had is like we'll do it sort of like a comedy manga basically where it'll be because the end of the book, and I can't spoil what happens, but it leaves our leads in a precarious and interesting situation that would be very fun to explore moving forward. And so you can do this. It's a, you know, essentially like a romantic haunting, so to speak, and go that angle and make it like really lean into like a comedy angle for it, for something that would just be totally different. But at this point in time, I'm just really happy with how it is as a single standalone story.
When you said that, I was gonna be like, everyone's vegan and everyone's wearing nothing but clothes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exact opposite. There's actually no everyone's wearing winter clothes. They got their full on parkas on.
I don't know if you were tracking like I was, but it Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood had the feel of a very well put together Lifetime movie.
I think you're watching Lifetime like at 3 a.m.
Shut up. You know it's true. You know it's true, damn it. I mean, Tubi's got a lot of really good Lifetime movies on there right now, and I can't stop myself. I cannot stop myself.
I think the relationship part can definitely be one of those trying to get someone to reconcile with their parents, and then of course we get into the horror aspect of it all, and where people actually will come in to watch and or read, and it does a really good job of to me blending those two, and also you kind of feel this what is it called, unnerving tension when they get to the location with Lisa, because Lisa doesn't know like what's going on. she doesn't know what to expect at first. And then when they're there, she doesn't know what's going on and she's trying to figure it out. And you just start seeing the colors like just get darker, you know, the pages get darker. And then it all goes to hell, I guess. But yeah, I think you did a really good job with that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and our colorist, AHG, he's amazing. The way he colors, it's almost like he just paints over the line art. And yeah, that's part of my favorite thing about the book is his colors. Because like you said, as it goes on, you know, it starts with like that blood red sky outside. It really sets an ominous tone. And then as you get further and further, the colors start to kind of get crazier and crazier. And he starts to break form. And there's a lot of just very cool color things for people that are very interested in color work. There's a lot going on there. He's a very talented artist.
Definitely. I noticed, like, I mean, the way that the panels were broken down, the musical notes in the top and bottom of some of the earlier panels and stuff like that, when they do the initial meeting, the basic artwork and everything like that goes into this, to build up the characters and whatnot. Adam does a great job. GH does a great job with those colors, laying it over. It really was a beautiful book to look at. So from that perspective, I mean, if somebody's looking at something that they're like, oh, well, what can I get lost in for a while? This is definitely something that I felt like I was going through and going, okay, I need more time. I want to read this again. So
that's like the highest praise. That's my goal is like, I want to make something where you finish it and they're like, all right, I need to go back and look at that again.
Well, let's move on to the next one. We don't want to run out of time. But so let's go ahead and talk about the other comic book here. Who Killed Sarah Shaw? When did this come out?
So right now we're currently like in production and we're running it basically as we're making it. We're running it through Adam's Patreon. So you can subscribe to his Patreon and get like updates weekly on it as we work on it. We are currently, I want to say he just put up the 35th page for it. So we're about almost 2/5 of the way through the story. It's going to be almost, I would say, double what Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood was in terms of length. Who Killed Sarah Shaw is a black and white book, which I'm super excited. I'm a big fan of black and white comics, whether it's manga or Western, you know, comics. I love looking at artists like line art, like the ink on the page. And so Adam's is a really good black and white artist. And unfortunately, in the modern landscape, black and white comics typically are like, they don't sell. Like the publishers don't want to do that. And then I'm like sitting there like pointing at the manga aisle and I'm like, they do sell. You just don't know. Like, you don't know how to sell it. Right. Like,
yeah.
Those are selling. They're black and white. They're not putting color in them. And so getting basically taking this time where we both had time off and we were like, you know, let's do this project. We'll run it through your Patreon. We'll get people in there. And, you know, he has other things that he posts too. So you're getting the comic plus whatever else he's posting, which is like, you know, original art. He has like a not safe for work tier because he does like tons of nude stuff. Obviously, if you're ready, Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood.
What?
So, yeah. So we're running it through there. And basically, we're going to run it through there until we're done. And then we'll publish it outright, like in a physical copy and everything. But we're hoping, you know, as it continues to go, more and more people hop on and try and solve the mystery because it's a quote unquote, I'll say quote unquote, true crime mystery that follows two content creators whose show's about to get canceled. And as a last ditch effort to kind of like boost their ratings and show their relevance, they want to, instead of just showing up and shooting their cold case style true crime show where they would just interview people and then they put the sad piano music behind it. they want to try and solve the mystery so they can leave with something that is actually groundbreaking, that is actually worth, you know, keeping their show alive and getting them some prestige and some, you know, financial security out of it. And so the core of that story, you know, is sort of this never ending fascination with death and murder that we have as a society. Like, true crime isn't new, right? We've been doing this since forever. Like, as soon as someone realized they could kill a person, like true crime, you know, that has been around. People have been fascinated by it. So it's kind of wrestling with this idea of like, okay, where are we at with, you know, these people who are monetizing trauma, right? They're monetizing these stories of despair and sadness and horror and using it as a vehicle for their success, right? You know, whether we want to frame it as like they're trying to do something right by the family or not, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, they see a compelling story and they know, hey, this can get on like Netflix. This can, you know, this can be series. This can be, you know, and then, and that's their job, you know? And so it's following that storyline with the two content creators while meanwhile they're interviewing all of these people from the small town of Hardground and trying to figure out what happened, you know. And this is, so it's a 40-year-old unsolved cold case and you're only hearing the people's side of the story as they tell it, right? So when we're showing anything in the past, you never get to see dialogue bubbles, you never get to see anything that's an objective fact. You only get to hear the story secondhand through the person who's remembering it, you know, from 40 years ago. And so I really want readers to engage with it and not just like read it and take everything at face value, read it. And, you know, as you're hearing the story, go like, nah, that's fucking bullshit. Like, I don't trust this fucking person, like, you know, or like agree with them. Or as the story goes on, you might see little instances here and there where you're like, well, this doesn't really line up with what they said previously, and trying to figure out and assert your own theories on who you think did it. That's the part I'm most excited about, is getting people involved with it as opposed to just like letting it glaze over them. You know, if you're, sometimes people watch movies or TV or whatever and you're not engaging with it, right? You're just like sitting there on the couch as it plays at you. So I want readers to like actually take a beat and think about what they're saying and you know, come up with their own opinions on everything.
No, I think it definitely to call it, hit the right spot in the right time. Like you said, right now we're in a place where everything has to be true crime. I feel like the best podcast or the award winning podcasts are all true crime. The ones that have get all the listens to. I mean, I belong in a podcast group, and everyone always says, "Oh, dang, true crime always takes all the." All the listens, they take all the
all of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so no, I think you did hit that. And then the way it feels, the black and white, it does go with the story. And I think that's really what it really comes down to. Does the black and white fit the story? Personally, I used to not like it growing up. I didn't used to like black and white comics, but as I've grown up and I've done more of these interviews and got to know the work and all that, I've actually learned to love black and white comics.
That's awesome. That, I mean, because it's one of those things, and I get that too, like growing up as a kid, like outside of, you know, your newspaper comic strips, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't a thing as kids until manga was introduced into my life. Because when you're a kid growing up, you have your black and white newspaper comic strips. Those are black and white. And so you associate them with kid comics, newspaper stuff, you know, things like that. And I like those. Like, I love Far Side and Calvin and Hobbes and everything like that. And then your superhero comics and, you know, everything like that was in color. So then if you are thinking like, well, this is sort of like the more mature thing, it's in color. And then manga comes along and kind of kicks your ass with that and goes like, actually, no, you can tell a story however you want as long as the art is the story. Like...
So yeah, so what do you want to make sure our audience gets to know about this the series or this comic book?
So this is definitely, it's a comic book for fans of true crime, right? That first and foremost. So if you're a fan of true crime, check it out. If you're a fan of, you know, sort of, I don't want to call it slice of life, but if small town, you know, dealings and stuff like that. I've heard people that have read it compared to like Mayor of East Town, you know, which, you know, so anything in that vein, like if you like mysteries that are set in small towns and stuff like that, it's a big thing. But mostly I think, you know, I just want people to go check it out, you know, keep an open mind and embrace it for trying something different, because there's really, as far as I'm aware, there's not another comic out there like it that's tackling true crime mystery the way we're doing it, the way we're telling our story with this sort of back and forth time flip and the subjective versus objective nature of, you know, our own lives and how we remember things in memory. So as you read it, you know, and if you follow along in the Patreon, you know, you're going to get, I think it's like I said, 35 pages. It's like a dollar a month you know, minimum to join. You know, you're getting an interesting story that is sad and traumatic, you know. So if you're, like I said, if you're a fan of true crime and you live for that stuff like I do, like, you know, you're going to get something out of it. And Adam's art is truly, truly worth the price of admission alone. Like, you could scrap all the word bubbles off of the story and it was worth it just to look at the art, because it is really fantastic. But yeah, that's probably what I'd want people most to know about it. You know, it's just, if you're a true crime fan, you know, if you love gorgeous artwork, you know, if you want a compelling mystery that isn't going to spoon feed you an answer, that's going to make you kind of like actually do your own sleuthing, right? You know, trust your guts, you know, talk, you know, when you're reading it, you know, formulate your own opinions on who you think is right and wrong, who you like and don't like, because I think the fun of it will be that every reader might have a different opinion, you know, based on who the interview subjects are. You know, you might be like, oh, I know a person like that, you know, they come off like an asshole, but they're not, like, they're not really an asshole. That's just how they are. You know, like, you know, sometimes, you know, people might see that and be like, no, that guy's just a fucking dick. Like, and so I think that's the fun of it, is, you know, actually, like I said, engaging with it and coming up with your own opinions and not letting, you know, the story just tell you, oh, this is how you should feel about it. You know,
I think you hit a really good point on it without giving anything away on it.
Yeah.
Where these programs usually will tend to romanticize the person, and I guess even the people who are being interviewed about it, they tend to only say the part that they know people want to hear, or it's edited in a way where it's only the parts that people want to hear. Mm-hmm. And you do feel this at the very beginning, but then later on you kind of hear like, all right, I'm gonna give you the true, like, story about how it really was, or how this person really was. And it's usually something people do not want to hear, so here it is. So yeah, I think you did, like I said, once again, I think you did a great job in telling the story, presenting the story, especially for what we've already been able to read, and setting it up to where, okay, well, let's see where this goes.
Thank you. That I'm happy to hear that. That's like, it's hard writing a mystery, to be honest. Like, it's not a genre I'm used to writing. And so making sure that it's compelling, because it's, you know, it's also a sort of slow burn, right? Like, it's a true crime doc style thing, right? Mm-hmm. They're not on the run, you know, they're not being attacked by a serial killer or anything like that. You know, they're trying to solve a 40-year-old murder case. So to know that, you know, it's creating that compulsion to keep reading, that makes me happy.
no, definitely, especially the preview that we were able to get, it drops off right where, well, we finished the first main story, but then we kind of like, oh, now I want to know where it's going, and I kind of want to know who kills Sarah Shaw. So yeah, I guess I would say, is there any true life series, podcast, anything that influenced this one?
Not anything like in particular. Leading up to it, I was watching, I listen to Last Podcast on the Left all the time. Mm-hmm. And I used to listen to My Favorite Murder and stuff like that, and I also just like watch a lot of true crime stuff. So nothing in particular, just more the general vibe, trying to watch as much of it as possible and pick up, like you were just saying, like, how do they shoot it? What are they talking about? How do they talk about things, right? What feels real versus what feels like these sort of spoon fed, like, this is what I've said every time we've ever talked about this, you know, and I just repeat the same story over and over again. Trying to figure that out and pick it up, watch different versions of it, right? You know, you got like your sort of like Netflix or your HBO Max, you know, true crime docs that are maybe high budget versus like your ID, you know, or like things like Flora Murders and stuff like that, where it really does feel a lot scummier, where they just like show up to just like, they're like, we got $4 to film this, like, off of it. And see how they handle things differently, right? Like, how does like a prestige true crime handle it, you know, where they're trying to actually tell a compelling story first and foremost, versus like people showing up and they're like, we just got to get this filmed, right?
you said that Who Killed Sarah Shaw is going to be about twice as big as Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood. Is this going to be? Are you going to just keep going until you conclude the story, or is there anything else planned beyond that?
It'll be done when the story's over. Right now, it's looking like, and this will probably be, I say it's locked in until I get to a spot and I'm like, oh, we got to keep going. But it's going to be 5 chapters. So right now, if you sub to the Patreon, you're getting the first full chapter plus almost all of the second chapter at this point. We're almost caught up with the whole second chapter. And then 3 more chapters after that. So it'll probably be like when all is said and done, like somewhere between like 110 and 130 pages, depending on how the last 2 chapters go. I'm still scripting those, but considering they're like the end of the story, they might end up running long because I won't want it to end.
Now, did you already have the killer already in mind when you started the process, like when you outlined it, or is it more like letting it organically go?
When I first started it, I did not know who the killer was going to be. I picked like my cast of characters and created everybody. And throughout this process, as I've been writing it, stuff has changed a handful of times. You know, who would get interviewed? Where are they getting interviewed? How is it happening? How does it play out naturally? Because not only do you have to figure out that interview aspect of who are the suspects you can line up, but how do you organically sort of get them into the fold and also create like compelling drama in the present,
mm-hmm.
you know, with those two content creators and everything. So as I was writing fairly early on, I decided on who the killer will be. And as far as I'll say right now, I don't expect that to change. But I very much am like a George R. R. Martin style writer. He calls himself a gardener. And so like the idea being, you know, as you write, you plant seeds and then you can wait for those ideas to take over. And you go based on that, as opposed to having everything fully outlined and saying like, I'm going to stick to this 100%. You know, as you write, you might be like, you might write a line and be like, ooh, that's something interesting. Like, let's explore that, you know, and dig a little deeper on that. So that's the plan right now.
I was going to say that as you're writing and as revisions start coming in, it might change the aspect of your story. And if you stick to your guns from the very beginning, you might write yourself into a corner. I think the person that I've heard talk about that is like Stephen King, and that's probably why sometimes the endings are like, wait, what?
Yeah, right. You get to the point where you're like, okay, I need to figure out how to do this. And I'm like very much not that type of writer. Like I'll do it like a rough outline just so I have a general idea of where I want to go. But at any given moment, I can be like, you know what? I don't like that anymore. Like, I don't think that's going to work based on what I wrote, you know? And sometimes too, you know, this doesn't sound very professional, but I have like a lot of notes and just like random lines and stuff I write. And sometimes I'll write a line down where I'm like, this is going to be a killer quote. And then by the time I finish the chapter, I'm like, oh, I didn't even put that in there. You know, like in there now. So we're just scrapping it.
So do you want to talk about anything else? Any other projects that you're working on?
So those are the two big ones that have come out recently and that are in current production. I do have one other project that is going to release this summer. The first issue of it will. It is not horror at all. It is called Falling Stars. It's kind of a sci-fi space opera that I'm working on with an artist called Marcus Jimenez. So it's his core idea that he brought to me, and I've been helping him flesh it out and build this world. And definitely, while it's not a horror book, like I said earlier on, like at the beginning, I tend to find ways to add horrific concepts and imagery like into these stories. And I plan on doing that in this too. Basically follows, you know, your classic sort of Star Wars style space opera, right? You have your empire, so to speak. And there's a princess for this empire, like Princess Leia, but not the same. And she's been locked in a tower her entire life. And one day her bodyguard kidnaps her. And so the story starts from there. And you're following this, the team of the rest of the bodyguards as they try to rescue the princess. And there'll be plenty of twists and turns and mysteries to unsolve and lots of action. That's the big thing I'm excited about. It's a very action heavy book compared to a lot of the other things I write. So Marcus's art, again, looks fantastic. This will also be a white book. He's doing a really good job creating some compelling action sequences. And every time he sends me stuff, he's got a background as like a video editor and FX artist too. So he's doing black and white line art, but then he's also including sort of like these effects style. I don't even know how to explain it. Effects style, like, you know, implements to the page. So like when you're seeing transitions. It's like, so like, for example, like in any manga, right? Like if you have like a laser sword, it's going to look like a, like how a laser sword is going to be drawn, right? Like, and it's going to be inked, but like, because he has this background in effects and stuff, like it looks more almost like it's special effects as opposed to line art. So it's got a very unique look to it, and he's doing a great job with that so far. And first, like I said, first issue, I think summer of 2023 is the goal for that. It's all done. It's just, you know, we got to ramp up the pre-release marketing and all that. And I'm excited for that. That'll be fun.
And how can people keep up with not only the stories that we've already talked about, but future stories that will come out?
Mm-hmm. So the easiest way is to follow me on Twitter at Frankie. That's FRANKEE underscore white, like the color. That's where I post pretty much everything. I'm on there all the time. I'm also on Instagram, Frankie.white, but that's more of a hodgepodge of like, if you want to see pictures of my dogs and stuff like that, like less business and more just like if I, you know, took a funny picture or something. But if you want to keep up with me for anything comics related, what I'm working on, Twitter's the way to go. And then I'm also just on there all the time too. So if you're, you know, if you're a fan and you want to shoot the shit or anything like that, I'm on there.
Is there anything that you're currently reading, or if you have time to read or watch in the horror genre?
So the one thing I'm super excited to watch, I haven't seen it yet. Obviously it's not out yet, but Evil Dead Rise comes out later this month. I'm very excited for that. Big Evil Dead fan, but I especially loved Fede Alvarez's 2013 remake. And so this one definitely seems to be in line with that tonally. It looks violent as hell. So I'm excited for that. In terms of reading things, I'm not reading too many actual horror books right now. I just finished a book called a comic called Black's Myth, which is it's about a werewolf detective. And that was a really, really good black and white comic. And then I'm also reading, there's a famous indie artist, Robert Crumb. He did a complete adaptation of the Book of Genesis and did all the art for it. I'm slowly making my way through that because even with all the drawings and everything, it's still reading the Bible, which is a slog. Like, it's a fairly hard, engaging text to work with.
Wait till he gets to, what is it? Numbers and
right. Thankfully it's just Genesis, man. So it's already a huge book and it's only just one book of the Old Testament. And so I'm working my way through that. And then other than that though, I've been not on a break from horror. So I just recently watched, I'll put on a movie every once in a while, but nothing new. It's usually like older stuff. Like I'll go on Shudder and I'll scour, you know, and I'm like, oh, this looks like a terrible 80s movie. I'm just going to put this on like while I'm working or something.
I've been more getting into like these indie movies. I found this movie. I don't know if you heard of it. Carousel.
Never heard of that.
It's ridiculous. It's I don't even know what, like, you know how they say like the B movie and they're like go all the way down. I don't even know how to explain it, but the director, I think he has a sense of humor to where he knows he's not going to be able to make this look like the great or the best because of budget. But he does a really good job. You actually get invested in the story of this ridiculous carousel horse that comes to life. and starts killing people. It's to me, it's more of a parody of a slasher film.
Okay.
And then you go ahead.
No, I like that idea. And I like that you lean into it a little bit, have fun with it.
Yeah, the best characters are actually the ones that I call out the ridiculousness of the situation. And then the main character actually is a little bit annoying, but the other characters that actually call out like the heck's going on are my favorite ones. And then you get to the second one. They're actually gonna fund for a third one. But the second one, it turns more into like a parody of like Taken. With the carousel horse.
Okay, I gotta check that out. What's that?
It's on Tubi. Carousel.
Oh, Tubi.
I was telling Greg and I was telling one of my friends. I'm like, I found this movie. It's ridiculous. It's I have no reason being so invested in this movie, in this story, because it's like I said, the story itself is not the greatest, but the voice they got for the carousel horse and you just got to see the special effects are pretty good and the killings are pretty good for the most part, but it is like I said, it's ridiculous.
Like you said, ridiculous. That sounds absurd. Those are for ones like if you can have a good time, if you can have a couple of nice grody kills in there, and you're gonna have fun with it. Those tend to be some of my favorites.
Yeah, no, it's a fun. I'm thinking of reaching out to the director, see if he'll come on and talk about that, because I really want to know like where all this came from, because it's like I said, I would have never have thought I would have seen a movie where a carousel horse comes to life and starts killing people.
I hope you get him on. I'd love to know the behind the scenes, like you said. How do you come up with that idea? How do you convince people to do that? Because that's the other part that people don't talk about when you're making something. Yeah. You got to convince everybody that your idea is good enough, like that it's worth making.
Yeah.
Color carousel. And people are like, yeah, let's do it.
So yeah, I'm gonna reach out to him to see if he'll come on. Like I said, the second one, that isn't really a horror movie, but still, it I was invested in the movie. I had to watch both of them. So now I have to figure out what happened to the third one. Is there anyone else that you would like to give a shout out to, like so other friends or colleagues that are doing some similar projects?
So I'll give a shout out to my artist, Adam Markiewicz. He did the art for Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood, Who Kills Sarah Shaw, and he worked on an older project with me called Broken Bear. It's a dark fantasy. You can follow him on Twitter at @AdManMan Comics. And then obviously we talked about AHG's color on Eat My Flesh, Drink My Blood. You can find him at AHG Color. Those guys are two of the most talented artists in comics right now. And I feel like it's only a matter of time before they sort of like break through the glass ceiling, so to speak, and become like really well known. So hop on early, enjoy their art. Maybe get a commission or something before it costs too much money.
Anywhere else that people can keep track of you as far as social media or like that?
Twitter and Instagram, like I said, are the two big ones. I have a Hive account, which is Frankie White, but I don't really use that. So primarily, pretty much, if you really want to follow, it's Twitter until Twitter fucking explodes or something. Until
Twitter explodes more. Well, Frankie, thank you very much for coming on this morning. I enjoyed our talk. Would love to have you on if you have anything else coming out later in the future, and discuss anything new. If it's horror related, of course we'll have you on here. We do kind of have a spinoff show where we kind of just talk about comics that are being crowdfunded. So if anything else, we can always try to do it on that particular show itself as well. So we'd love to have you on and see what you have coming in the future.
I'd love that. Thank you.
Well, Frankie, we'll leave it there, and just send me over the links, everything like that. I'll make sure to put it in the description so that anyone listening will be able to find you or find any of the content that we talked about. And like I said, thank you once again, and thank you everyone for joining us here under From the Crypt.
It's your turn to be afraid.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright, thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.